Perhaps, Susan said years later, if Roscoe hadn't filed a civil harassment complaint against her, dragging her into the ugly legal arena first, she wouldn't have used the evidence. It was early 1981, and the warring had been going on for several months when Susan was summoned to the Los Angeles County Attorney's Office for a hearing regarding Roscoe's complaint that she was disrupting his life with obscene and threatening telephone calls to him and his mother. Susan nodded when the hearing officer admonished her to cease this behavior. Her opportunity for decisive revenge finally came later that year, after the Cosmos incident. It was at the Shakey's Pizza Parlor during Memorial Day weekend in 1981 that Kevin and Roscoe decided to break into Pacific Bell's Cosmos Center in downtown L.A. Understanding Cosmos was essential for efficient freaking. Cosmos, the acronym stands for Computer System for Mainframe Operations, is a large database program used by local telephone companies throughout the nation for everything from maintaining telephone cables to keeping records and carrying out service orders. In 1981, most of the hundreds of Cosmos systems installed around the country were running on digital equipment computers. In order to manipulate Cosmos, it was necessary to know a dozen or so routine commands, all of which were outlined in telephone company manuals. A 30-minute foraging session in the trash bins behind the Cosmos Center could yield considerable booty. Discarded printouts, notes passed between employees, and scraps of paper containing passwords. Though most trashing was done late at night, even those who preferred to trash at midday were seldom spotted. If they were, they usually had a plausible enough reason for being found knee-deep in the garbage. Susan's favorite method of sneaking manuals and printouts out of dumpsters was to bring along a bag of aluminum cans and hide the booty among the cans. Roscoe claimed he was hunting for recyclable material. Roscoe, Kevin, and Mark Ross, a friend and occasional freak, set out from Shakey's late one night in a caravan of three cars. When they arrived at the phone company parking lot, it was a short walk through an open chain-link fence. Why, after all, should the phone company bother locking up its trash? Into an area containing several dumpsters. They clambered in and started wading through old coffee grounds, discarded styrofoam cups, and other garbage in search of the occasional gem. Kevin and Roscoe already knew quite a bit about Cosmos, but they wanted to get a firm grip on the password setup. Certain passwords were needed for certain levels of privilege in the Cosmos system. The password to the most privileged account of all, called the root account, still eluded them. The root account was the master key to all other accounts on the computer system. Its password would give them the power to do anything in Cosmos. The trash can's offerings were paltry that night. Perhaps another freak had been there earlier in the evening. Kevin found a handbook to a computer called the Frame that would probably be useful, but otherwise the pickings were thin. After taking what they had found in the trash to their respective cars, the three freaks huddled briefly to discuss whether to go into the Cosmos Center itself. Kevin wanted to find room 108, the office he knew contained the Cosmos computer itself, a guaranteed load of information. At first, Roscoe wanted Kevin to approach the guard himself. Kevin would impersonate a Pacific Bell employee, tell the guard that two friends would be arriving in a few minutes for a tour of the facility, and if the guard bought it, Kevin would use his handheld walkie-talkie to transmit a touch-tone signal to Roscoe's walkie-talkie, telling him the plan had worked. But Kevin was nervous. He didn't want to go in by himself. They would all go together, or not at all, he said. The three argued about the matter for several minutes until finally the other two agreed to accompany Kevin to the back entrance, where a guard sat at a reception desk. They piled into Kevin's car and backed out of the trash area. In order to be conspicuous upon arriving this time, Kevin drove around to the main parking lot in the back of the building and parked with his headlights beaming in through the glass door. If the guard thought there was anything peculiar about a Pacific Bell employee arriving at 1 a.m. on a Sunday to give a guided tour to two friends, he didn't show it. Kevin appeared far older than his 17 years, and he talked a convincing line. As Roscoe and Mark stood by, Kevin chatted up the guard. First came idle chit-chat. Kevin had a report due on Monday, he said, and was upset that he had to come into work on Memorial Day weekend. Apparently welcoming the distraction from his nighttime vigil, the guard didn't ask to see Kevin's company ID, nor did he ask which department the pudgy young man worked for. In a friendly and inquisitive manner, Kevin strolled over to a television monitor that wasn't working and asked the guard about it. They both shrugged. Just on the blink, I guess, Kevin suggested. Then, as if he had done it 1,000 times, he signed the name Fred Weiner in the logbook and Sam Holliday for Roscoe. His imagination apparently spent, he entered M. Ross for Mark Ross. Once inside, after a false start that led them into the mailroom, the visitors dispersed through the halls. It didn't take long for them to find the Cosmos Computer Center in room 108. A metal basket attached to the wall held a list of dial-up numbers for calling the CMOS computer from outside. Kevin removed the list and put it in his pocket, and in a paper tray on a desk they found a list of codes to the digital door locks at 9 telephone central offices. In the Rolodex files on several desks, the three young men planted cards printed with the names John Draper, the real name of the infamous Captain Crunch, and John Harris. Next to John Harris's name was the telephone number of the Prestige coffee shop in Van Nuys, a number that freaks routinely intercepted and rerouted to a loop line. Next to Draper's name was the number of a nearby payphone. The idea was to create instant credibility. If one of them called claiming to be John Draper, a Pacific Bell employee, and if a security measure the recipient of the phone call consulted his Rolodex file to verify the name and number, he would find the information. Next to room 108 was the Cosmos manager's office. The walls were lined with shelves holding 6 large manuals. A quick look through the books was all they needed to see that this was perhaps the most important thing they would find that night. They were the Cosmos manuals, which contained information on everything that could be done with the Cosmos computer. The group perused the shelves and set aside the books they wanted to take. Once they had gathered what they thought they could use, they piled it all on one desk and sorted it so as to reduce the bulk and appear less suspicious to the guard. Roscoe spotted a briefcase next to a desk. He picked it up and put the manuals inside. Then, each carrying as much as he could, they walked back out to the guard station, where Kevin signed out and exchanged hearty farewells with the guard. Just as casual as he was about letting them in, the guard seemed thoroughly unconcerned that these three young men had arrived empty-handed and were leaving laden with a briefcase and armloads of books. Kevin drove the others to their cars, and the three drove in single file to the nearest Winchell's Donuts to divide their plunder. It had all taken less than 2 hours. Unfortunately, they had been too greedy. When the Cosmos manager arrived on Monday morning, he couldn't help but notice that his shelves were nearly bare. He notified security immediately and questioned the guard who had been there over the weekend. The guard mentioned the threesome from Sunday morning, and he said he was sure he could recognize them again. Then the manager found 2 cards in his Rolodex with unfamiliar handwriting, which belonged to no one in the office. It was time to call corporate security.